Well, it is my pleasure to introduce to you Peter Brothers, CEO of Specs Brothers, a magnetic tape restoration, disaster recovery, and remastering facility that since 1983 has reformatted over 350,000 tapes. Peter is an active participant and contributing author in the technical commissions responsible for creating national and international sound and moving image preservation standards for the Society of Motion Pictures and TV Engineers, the Audio Engineering Society, the American National Standards Institute, and the International Standards Organization. Peter also enjoys swimming and hang gliding, and as a hobby, he designs theater sets. So I'll leave to you, Peter Brothers. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry I'm not up at the, is this working? Yes. I'm sorry I'm not up at the podium, but I've got a widescreen computer and it doesn't fit. Okay. Yes. This afternoon, I'm going to present to you a examination protocols that were developed by the joint AES-ISO Technical Commission. These protocols have been included in two recently published international standards. These are ISO 18933, that was just published last year, and AES 94, that was published in 2005. The standard, the inspection itself, has three specific purposes. First, it can be used to assess the general overall condition of a collection. It can tell you whether the tape assets that you have are in reasonable condition or whether there may be a problem with them and you may be losing the potential to access the recordings that are on those tapes. It also gives you an ability to go in and see if there are problems occurring with your tapes. It'll give you some information where you can go back and check how are they being stored, how are they being handled. The second thing is to help prioritize your preservation initiatives. Every archive I've gone to has certain budget constraints. And within and by identifying specific tapes that are compromised, this allows you to focus your efforts on those things that need it most before they get to a point where they're no longer recoverable. Another thing that this helps in is the fact that since it is in an international standard, it gives you the ability to go back to your funding organization and say, we've done this test, we now have hard data, these tapes are now considered, they are defined as endangered by international standards. This sometimes can be helpful with your funding, sometimes not. And of course, the third is to protect your recordings from unnecessary damage and loss. If the tapes fail the inspection that we go through here, most of the problems can be corrected. However, if you don't do the inspection, simply use the tapes, you can potentially destroy any future possibility of recovering the recordings off those materials. Why use this particular inspection? First off, the Joint Technical Commission decided to put together an inspection that was as universally applicable as possible. You do not need to be an engineer. You do not need to be a tape expert. You don't need special schooling to do this. Anyone can go into their archive and do this inspection. The next reason to use this is it's fast. It does not take a lot of time. Once you get used to doing the inspection, you can actually perform the physical inspection itself in less time than it takes you to write down what you find. So it's not going to take up a lot of your time. It shouldn't be a problem with your personnel. The third reason to use this inspection is it requires no equipment. You don't need scopes. You don't need even playback machinery. All you need is a human being and a piece of tape. And, of course, the last is because it's mandated by international standards. I want to make, before we get into the main part of the presentation, I want to say a little bit about what standards are. Standards are informational. They generally tell you what to do. They will have some information in them telling you why you're doing it, but it's usually very limited, and they almost never tell you how. In the presentation now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually cover all three of these things. I'm going to show you what to do. I'm going to give you some information in terms of why, so you're a little bit more comfortable when you do the inspection, and I'm actually going to show you photographs of how to do it and exactly what you're looking for so that when you leave here, you should be able to go back to your archive and actually perform it with a good deal of confidence. The last thing about international standards is international standards say you shall and you must. I find it a little silly standing up here in front of a bunch of people saying you must do this and thou shalt do that. So I've changed some of the wording. I'm allowed to change the wording. I haven't violated any copyright because I'm one of the primary authors. I've made it a little bit more user-friendly. Just if you want to refer it back to what the standard would say, every time I say, oh, it would really be a good idea to do this, just think in your mind, you must do this. Now, according to the international standards, there are two real times that this inspection should be done. You should do it before any major change in status. That means you should do it before you put a tape up to play it back to access it. If a tape is compromised and it fails the inspection, you put it up to play it back, you could have some serious problems. The other time, also when you're putting it in storage, you may get tapes in from someplace else. You don't know what their condition is. You can use this examination to get a general idea of their condition before you put them in storage. You just don't want to stick stuff away. If it's compromised, that may get worse if it's sitting in storage for a long period of time. Also, you want to periodically do it with your collection, things that you already have. You can go in and take a sample, and over a period of time, you can see how well you are preserving your material, whether these things are standing up to the test of time, whether or not you may have to do something with your climate control, whether you may have to change some handling procedures. The reason you're doing the inspection, as I had stated previously, is to prevent unnecessary damage to the tape. And if the tape is seriously enough damaged, you will lose the ability to access the recording that's on it, and also to prevent damage to the machinery. Well, just how well can you really assess the condition of a tape with something that is a simple, quick, physical inspection? I want to show you a couple of examples of what happens if you try and play back tapes that fail this inspection. This is a digital tape. It's been treated so you can see all the digital tracks on it. Each one of these lines is a track of digital information. This whole section in the middle is lost data. This is a 3/4-inch tape from a network news broadcast organization. They wanted the material back as soon as they could get it. They knew it failed the inspection. They played it anyway. All the abrasion you see there, the white lines and the spots, are places where the actual recording surface has been ripped off the tape. This section of tape, the recording is gone. It cannot be recovered. They're able to recover the rest of the tape, but where they played it back, they got to a certain point and the tape just stopped dead in the machine. They've destroyed the recording on this part of the tape. This is a BETA-SP tape that also failed one of the steps in the test, and as you can see, it's ripping apart. And for every revolution, each time you pull more tape off that, it's going to rip worse and worse. There's another 3/4-inch tape. Here you can see where parts of the tape are actually shredding inside the cassette shell. This is a VHS tape. All the places you see here are places where the recording surface has come off because someone tried to play this tape back. So that's some of the things that can happen with the tape. How about the machinery itself? I'm sure everyone who's had a VCR has gotten one of those little cleaning cassettes. You put it in periodically so that your machine will work better. This is a machine that somebody, this is a professional machine that somebody put a tape in that failed the exam, and all the white you see here is contamination, stuff that has come off the tape from the tape decaying. You can't clean this machine with a cleaning cassette. At the very best, you're going to have a technician take it apart and decontaminate it. At the worst, you may have to replace parts in the machine that have been broken. So you can, it can identify things that are a danger. Before we get to the actual inspection, I want to go through a few preliminary steps. These are things that are drawn out of the larger part of the international standards but are not part of the actual inspection itself. But it is important if you're going to inspect tapes that you don't damage them additionally by handling, and that you identify what you're actually examining. First of all, there are three basic things you, in terms of handling tape, so that you don't damage it more. These seem fairly self-evident, but for some reason, people do not treat tapes well. They treat lots of other documents with a lot of care, but people have a tendency to throw tapes around. You may be able to get your vacuum cleaner to start working again by giving it a swift kick. There is nothing you can do to a videotape that's going to make it better by banging it. All you're going to do is damage it more. Do not expose it to food or drink. Seems simple enough, but I can't count the number of archives and facilities I've gone into where people have left drinks and sandwiches on top of unique, priceless tape masters. Don't leave them on the floor, ever, not even for 5 minutes. A facility down in the southeast did everything right. They handled their tapes right. They were racked properly. It was climate controlled. They were going to do a program. They pulled all the masters for the program, all the field tapes. I guess they felt they didn't have enough room on a table. They lined them up on the floor so it was easy to pull 1, 2, 3, 4 for editing purposes. They went out to lunch, and a water main blew. Disasters don't happen at your convenience. Don't ever leave things on the floor. The other thing you want to do, and this is not in the international standard, but is extremely important if you're going to be doing an examination of your materials. What do you have? What exactly are you examining? You would be surprised just how many people don't know. And if you don't know, don't feel bad about it, because there are lots of other people out there who also don't know, and people who really should. I'm talking about network broadcasts. I'm talking about editing houses. Don't know what they've got. One of the first things, of course, you're going to want to do is take the metadata about what is recorded on the program. At the very least, you want to take the title, whatever inventory control you're using, the running time of the program, and the date it was recorded. There may be other things you want to record, but that's the very least you want to record about any kind of program. And also, always check the tape or the cassette inside the box. Don't trust the label on the outside of the box. It's very possible that more valuable recordings are lost because they're misplaced in the wrong boxes or mislabeled. The second thing is, do you actually have tape? We get this all the time. Not long ago, we got a call from a very large federal repository. They had had an incident. They had sent their material out to a facility to have it worked on. The facility called them back in a panic. They called us to say the facility can't figure out what kind of tape they have. It took about 30 seconds for them to describe it to find out that, no, they did not have 2,000 reels of wet tape. They had 2,000 reels of wet microfilm. The way you identify film is if you can see any image through it at all, or it has sprockets along the end, it's film. If you can't see anything, it's a blank ribbon, it's tape. The next thing you want to do is it audio or video? It makes a big difference to your collection. When you decide to do something with it later, you cannot play an audio tape on a video machine, and you cannot play a video tape on an audio machine. So this year, I use this specifically because sometimes it's difficult. Often it's fairly easy to identify, but sometimes it is difficult. This looks like a standard VHS cassette. This is actually a digital audio tape. A lot of tapes are used for multiple purposes. So identify if your tape is audio or video. The next thing, you want to physically describe the tape. People will call us and say, oh, we have a collection of 200 or 500 or whatever tapes. Well, what do you mean? They're videotapes. Very nice. What kind of videotapes? All reel-to-reel tapes, at a minimum, are described by the width of the tape, 2-inch, 1-inch, 1/4-inch. That is the way they are described. And it's important to keep your descriptions standardized. Cassette tapes, however, are usually some sort of name. You'll have Beta-SP, you'll have SVHS. Now, there is an exception to this, which is 8mm and 3/4-inch. They are actually described by the width of the tape, but most people, when they say high 8, they often don't realize that actually means it's 8mm wide. So the reel-to-reel are the width of the tape, and the cassettes are by a name. If you can, identify the manufacturer and the formulation. This will make a difference when you do your inspection later, because you will find the tapes made by the same company in a general time period will have a tendency to have the same problem. So if you get cassettes made by a particular manufacturer in the late 70s, and you find in the inspection they have a certain problem, you may want to go back into your collection and check other tapes by that manufacturer of the same era. As far as the formulation is concerned, there is one thing that is absolutely key. Now, they constantly change the formulations of tapes. Often that's going to be difficult for you to determine. They frequently didn't tell people. But there was one major formulation change that deals specifically with reel-to-reel audio tape. All videotape and all modern audio tape is made out of, it's a polyester base. Some early audio tape was an acetate base. The way you tell the difference is if you hold the reel up, you can see light shining through an acetate tape. You can see no light shining through a polyester tape. The reason this is important is standard restoration procedures that are used on polyester tapes will destroy an acetate tape. If you apply some of the restoration procedures that are used around the world on polyester, you will never be able to use that acetate tape again. It will be totally destroyed. The next thing you want to do is if you don't have an actual running time on your tape, you need to record someplace what the potential running time is. How big is the tape? Reel-to-reel tapes are always in feet. This one's 7,200 feet long. That's a 90-minute 2-inch tape. Cassette tapes always do it in potential minutes. This one is a 90-minute Beta SP tape. And the final thing you want to do in pre-inspection is you want to activate your record lockouts on all your cassettes. If you get absolutely nothing else from this presentation, go back to your archive and do this. Not a single week passes where we don't get multiple calls by people who have erased or recorded over their material. And believe me, when somebody's recorded the late night movie over their wedding video, unhappy things happen. And if you happen to have recorded a soap opera over the footage for your evening news show, unfortunate things happen as well. I mean, this is not something that just happens at home. This happens at archives. This happens at broadcasters. And unlike a computer, if you hit delete on your computer, all it does is it erases the path to the data. The data is still there. When you record or erase over an audio or videotape, it replaces the data. The original data is no longer there. It cannot be recovered. It's not there. So this is extremely important. So pre-inspection, you record your information about what is recorded on it. You identify if it's tape. If it's tape, you make sure whether it's audio or video. You'd physically describe it. What is the format? Is it a reel-to-reel? Is it a cassette? What kind is it? If you can identify the manufacturer and the and specifically for audio, the formulation, is it acetate or polyester, the physical length of the tape, and activate those record lockouts. Now we're going to go into the inspection itself. And according to the international standards, while this examination does not identify all the problems that can occur, if the tape fails any of these inspection criteria, it is endangered. Remember the pictures of the things that I showed you of people who tried to play back tapes that had failed. The second thing about this is this inspection should be done in the order that it is presented. You'll understand why very shortly. Now, in your handouts, you have basically the written portion of the inspection. So I'm not going to review that. We don't have time for me to go through the written portion and then go through it step by step and show you what to do. But initially, essentially, what you're looking at is seven different steps. You're looking at the overall physical condition. You're looking for breakage. You're looking for evidence of mold on the tape. Then there's a smell test that you're going to perform. You're then looking for outside contaminants. This is dust, debris, water that may have gotten on the tape. Then you're going to be examining the tape for decay residues. These are contaminants that are coming from inside the tape rather than outside the tape. Going to inspect the pack. This is the way that the tape is wrapped on the reel itself. You can tell a tremendous amount about the condition of the tape, how it's been handled, and the things that might occur simply by the way the tape is wrapped on the reel. And finally, you examine a few strands of the tape that are on the end of the reel. Now, the first tape, the first one itself is checking the physical container. If there's damage to the physical container, there is likely to be other damage. There may well be damage to the tape. There may be other problems involved. In this particular circumstance, this is a VHS tape where the door has been broken and the viewing window on the side has been cracked. If you load this tape, one of the things that happens is when the door is broken, if you load it, it's going to load into the machine improperly. It's going to load in it askew. The best thing that can happen is the machine's going to say no and spit it out. If it doesn't, one of the things that can occur is since it's loading it in at the wrong angle, especially if you fast-forward or rewind the tape, you can crease and mangle the entire tape from beginning to end. The other thing is, now you have a cracked window here. This impacts inside the cassette. Now, we've taken the cassette apart to show you, but what has happened is because the outside was cracked, it smashed the reel inside. The reel is shattered. It's ripped the tape apart. The part of the reel has impacted because of the force of the machine working into the other reel, doing serious edge damage. Even on reel-to-reel tapes, when the damage doesn't look particularly severe, this is one where somebody just dropped it. It's a very heavy, sturdy tape. It doesn't seem like it would do much damage. But this is there's a compression damage. A tape must be smooth and flat for you to be able to get the signal off it. Not only do you have this compression damage here where this occurred, this tape is 2 inches wide. The space between the two reels is no longer 2 inches wide. Every time the tape goes around and hits that part, you're going to either have more compression damage or the tape may rip, which means the tape could rip every couple of feet. You have another problem that has occurred with the miniaturized formats. Because the machine has to, when you play it back, it's got to access the tape. The tape comes out from one reel, goes over to the other reel, and when it's not in a machine, it's got a little door that covers it to protect that exposed bit of tape. On the miniaturized formats, the door is both on the front of the tape and the back, and the movement of that door is controlled and directed by this little tiny post that goes down this slot. That post is about the size of a pencil lead and made out of plastic. If that is abraded or damaged or jumps the track, once again, your tape will not load into the machine properly, and you can do major, major damage to the tape. This is one of the sort of things that can happen when things don't load properly, or if you use rewinders as opposed to actual machinery to rewind. There's a DV cam tape, and you can see the tape has actually been pulled off the reel and across the side. This is a standard audio cassette. We've taken it apart to show you what will happen. It gets pulled off, and it gets pulled around the central hub and mangled until eventually there's so much friction that the tape will stop. You hope the friction happens very, very quickly because the longer it takes to happen, the more tape you're going to mangle. The second thing you're going to look for is mold. Mold generally will start growing on the boxes itself if it's exposed to high humidity, but will move over and grow on the tape. Mold is very happy growing on tape in moist conditions. It will continue to grow. The longer it grows, the more damage it's going to do. It also, if you have mold on your tape in your collection, it will infect other tapes in your collection. If you try and play back a tape with mold, it will infect your machinery and any other tape you put on that particular machinery will get infected with mold. Now, the way to identify the mold is you're looking for patterned black, brown, white, mustard-colored contamination, or for fuzzy or thread-like patterning. When you have a cassette, all cassettes have a portion of them that is at least partially see-through, and you can see the side of the tape there. You can see mold occasionally on the labels or on the side of the tape through that viewing window. The reason you do this examination in the order it's presented is because of this step. If you detect mold either visually or because there's a musty smell, stop the investigation. Do not do any more. Isolate the tape. Get it out of your general archive. According to the international standard, what you're supposed to do at that point is contact an expert to deal with it. But you have to be careful. Mold will infect the rest of your tapes, and it can be a serious health hazard. So you want to isolate that and get it out of the way. If you do not detect mold or a musty smell that could be mold, the next thing you do is a smell test.
Peter?
Yes?
Should you freeze-dry tapes to detect
mold? You should not freeze-dry tapes, ever. Freeze-drying will damage certain chemicals in the tapes, and if, especially if they're miniaturized tapes, they will snap. But the third step, the smell test. Tapes that are starting to chemically decay will give off certain odors. The chemical decay, the most common chemical decay of tapes is something called binder hydrolysis. What happens is the recording surface of tape is made out of polyester, they're polymers, they're long chain molecules. The tape will absorb moisture right out of the air from it'll absorb the water right out of the air from just moist, high humidity conditions. It breaks down these long chain molecules into shorter molecules, which are called a oligomer. One of the things this does is weakens the structure of the tape because it's the long chain of the molecules that gives the tape its strength. Just consider snipping fibers in your sweater. Eventually, the sweater is going to fall apart. The other problem that occurs with this chemical reaction is the short chain oligomers are sticky. The common term that a lot of people use is sticky shed. Sticky shed is just a common usage for the technical term is binder hydrolysis.
Is the odor off gas tape resonant?
There has been a lot of tests done with that, and none of the tests have confirmed any danger to the health. Now, most of these tests were actually done by the manufacturers. Okay. Now, the residue from binder hydrolysis is not visible on the tape surface itself unless it's really, really bad. Your tape's going to look like this up here. But there may be enough of it that it's going to cause the tape to stick together. So as you try and unroll the tape, it can pull the recording surface right off the tape and tear the tape. The other thing that'll happen is, as you run it through your machine, on the guides of the machine, the heads of the machine, it'll slowly scrape small amounts of this off till it builds up. And this is what you have here. It'll build up into this tarry substance. Enough of it will build up where it'll lock the tape down on the machine, and the machine will come to a grinding halt. Now, this can rip your tape in half. It can also occasionally rip the heads right out of your machine. The smells, the common smells that you have, the first one is waxy, which people describe as either like candle wax or like crayons. This is very common in certain 3/4-inch cassette tapes. The next smell is dirty socks. It smells like an old gym locker. This occurs both on cassette tapes and on reel-to-reel. Although the smell is determined by the particular chemical mix that they've done with the tape. The third one is pungent astringent. Now, this isn't actually a smell, but when you open the case, your nose will sort of wrinkle up and your eyes may start to tear. And as I said, the testing done by the manufacturer says there is nothing dangerous about any of this off-gassing. However, I'm not really fond of something making me cry. When you're smelling these, one of the things that you want to do, as long as I said you have identified that there is no fungus, you want to do the smell test as soon as possible because these odors will dissipate very, very quickly. If you open a box and you leave it there for a day, you may not smell anything the next day. When you're smelling a tape, I'm sorry, it sounds a little strange. On a reel-to-reel tape, all reels have these little windows. They're called windage slots that allow you to see the edge of the tape. That is the best place to smell a reel-to-reel tape. On cassettes, if you turn a cassette over, as I said, as I showed on the smaller tapes before, the tape goes out and it'll go under this door. And on the back of any cassette tape, there will be a little opening there, and that's where you would smell a cassette tape to get the best indication of an odor. The fourth test you're doing is for external contaminants. So you want to check the tape, the edge. You also want to check the box, the reel, the cassette for particulate contaminants. All these little white spots you see on here are dust and debris that has gotten on the tape. Here's a close-up. And if you see right here, actually a hard piece of debris has actually penetrated into the pack of the tape and has caused some deformation. The even small amounts of particulate contamination can interfere with your signal playback. And what you're going to end up doing is you're either going to get a degraded copy of whatever was recorded on there, or you may get no copy at all. Here you have, this is a cigarette ash, this is a hair, this is cotton, this is dust. I'm not entirely sure how the National Media Lab got an average size for dust, but, and this is a fingerprint. This small space here is the amount of space necessary to cause some loss of signal. So all of these are substantially larger than is necessary to cause some loss of signal. Now, there are a lot of things in machinery that will cover up loss, but if you're remastering something, you want to get as much signal off that tape as possible. And what will happen is the debris you'll get on the tape will push the tape up. The tape's supposed to be smooth on the head, and it'll push the tape up over so that the head's trying to read it from a distance. The other thing that'll happen is if you have enough debris, the debris, as opposed to being carried on the tape, will start to accumulate on the head. So every bit of tape that goes over is going to be pushed away from the head. Eventually, you'll get enough buildup that you won't get any signal at all. This is just this is a diagram of the first picture you saw before where you have loss. Now, if the debris is on the tape and gets carried away, that's one thing. You have some signal loss. But if it's a hard piece of debris, such as I showed in the last picture that was penetrated into the wrap, it can actually, as it runs over the machine, scratch the tape. If it scratches the tape, you then have a hole in a depression in that tape that's permanently away from the heads, and you've lost signal at that point. If you have, you're not just looking at the physical tape itself, you're also looking at its container. If you have a lot of debris on the container itself, you are going to have debris on the tape. The next thing you want to look for, besides the dry particulate contamination, is any sign of liquid contamination. You're looking for rust, water spotting, deformation. And with this, whether it happens to be a cardboard box like I showed before or a plastic cassette container, no case or box made for tape is either airtight or watertight. If you've got a lot of debris, now hopefully you won't see this, this was in a flood. If you have a lot of debris on the outside, you are going to have debris on the inside. Water has some very specific problems with tape. Now, one of the things, the early tape, a lot of the reel-to-reel tape and your VHS tape, your old three-quarter inch U-matic, the mechanism they used for recording the magnetic signal was ferric oxide, which is just a fancy name for rust. So when you get water on it, it can do a lot of things, but it won't rust the magnetic particles. New tape, however, to get more data on the tape, what they have done is they've started using active metal particles. Now, these particles are coated to protect them from atmospheric moisture, but if you actually physically get water on the tape, that coating may fail. And if it fails, all the spotting you see here are places where the magnetic particles have rusted. When they rust, the magnetic properties change and you lose the recording entirely. The other thing liquids do, and this doesn't make any difference if it's new tapes or old tapes, is as the liquid dries, it will have a tendency to stick the tape itself, to itself in the wrap, and also stick it to the inside of the cassette. This is a VHS. You can see the tape stuck to the door. And here, if you see the clear spot, as the door was opened, I mean, this didn't even get into a machine. As the door was opened, it ripped the recording surface right off the tape. So you're looking for water spotting. Any sign of liquid contamination is a serious issue. Now, there are a couple of very specific types of contamination I just want to point out. One of them is called cushion flange glue. This only happens in 2-inch and 1-inch videotape made by 3M. Because these were very heavy tapes, at one point they put a cushion on the inside to protect the edges of the tapes as they were shipped. You can identify these reels by the fact that it says Scotch, which is 3M. They're gold, and they have a beveled edge. That's beveled so the cushion can fit in. At one point, there was a manufacturing defect. They used the wrong glue to glue the cushion into the reel. And what you'll find is something that looks like honey inside the reel. That means the glue is melted. It's all over the tape. If you try and run this, you will tear the tape apart, and you very well may tear your machine apart. It can be fixed. It can be, but if you try and run it before removing the glue, you will have serious problems. The other specific contaminant to a particular type of tape that I want to mention is with old reel-to-reel audio. No, you are never supposed to edit a tape with a splice. You're not supposed to put a splice in a tape, in the part that you run. But with early audio tapes, they had no other way to edit it. They did not have our electronic editing system, so they were edited by hand. They were spliced together as they edited it. No, these splices were glued onto the back of the tape. Unfortunately, some of the glue was pretty good, some wasn't. Here you see all these blobs. This is where the glue from the splices has melted and run onto the tape. When you run this tape, not only will all the splices come apart, but the different wraps of the tape are now glued together, so you're going to start ripping the tape up. The fifth step is looking for decay residues. These are contaminants on the tape that came from inside the tape, not from outside. So what you're going to want to do is check the edge of the tape for a white powder or a crystalline residue. If you've got reel-to-reel tapes that have metal reels, sometimes you will see this on the reel itself. If it's very, very bad, you'll see the powder or the crystals. You can see how they shine. Now, the residues have been identified as a lot of different things. Until such time as you try to remove them, it doesn't make that much difference. You can't play the tapes with these residues on them. The powder will clog up your machine very badly. That was actually what was on the machine that I showed you that somebody had tried to play it back, was the powder residue. The crystalline residue can actually bond wraps together and cause the tape to tear itself apart while you're playing it. I've seen tapes with the white residue on it where when they ran it looked like snow was flying off. That'll clog up your machines. But these are the various things, and as I said, until you actually try and remove them, it doesn't make that much difference what they are, but we have done a lot of laboratory testing and have identified quite a number of things that these are. Now, it may be difficult to tell the difference on occasion between the decay residues and fungus. These things look pretty much the same. But the decay residues can be identified by the fact that they're powder, either a white powder, which is generally in a smear, or sometimes will run in a line along the wraps of the tape, or this crystalline residue. Whereas your fungus is thread or web-like. Now, hopefully you won't get to this point because you will have identified the fungus first and isolated it. But whether it's fungus or decay residue, you still can't play the tape. The big difference is decay residue will not, unlike film, where you have vinegar syndrome that can affect other tapes, decay residue on tape will not affect other tapes in the collection. It is totally intrinsic to the tape itself that is decaying. Another type of decay residue you want to look for is little flakes, and they'll match the color of the recording surface. On reel-to-reel, on cassette tapes, the recording surface is on the outside of the reel. On reel-to-reel, except some European tapes, it's on the inside. So this matches that color. And this is an indication of binder base adhesion failure. What that means is the fact that the recording surface is starting to flake off your tape. When you take the tape, this is a close-up of what some of these flakes look like inside the box. It's very difficult to detect binder base adhesion failure in cassettes. A lot of the cassette may be covered up inside the cassette. It's only you may be able to detect it through the door. It should be, if anybody does try to start playing it back, it'll be evident very, very quickly because the tape starts to just fly apart. This is a standard audio cassette that someone tried to play that had binder base adhesion failure. All of the clear spots here are the base of the tape. It's the ribbon on which the tape is made. All of the darker spots are the recording surface that has just fallen off the tape, ripped off the tape. Binder base adhesion failure can be dealt with sometimes, but it is one of the most difficult problems to deal with in the decay vectors of tape. If you start to detect that binder base adhesion failure is occurring with your tape, you should address that problem as soon as possible because it'll only get worse. The next step is to inspect the wraps of the tape. The way you do this is you have a light source behind the person, and it's shining on the tape and back at the person here with the cassette, same thing. What you're trying to do is you're trying to illuminate the edge of the tape so you can inspect what its condition is. This is just a diagram to show what this is what tape should be like. It should be nice and smooth and even and evenly between the reels. Now, the standard gives you the ideas of these are the different things that you're going to be looking for. These are the names, and they're described in words in your handout. But what I want to do is I want to show you what they actually look like. The words really don't give you enough information to identify these things easily. The first one you're dealing with is spoking. And spoking is, when you're shining the light on the tape, it's a change in the reflection radiating out this way on the tape. Sometimes it can be extremely bad. This is generally an indication that there is some sort of tension problem on the tape. You may end up with tape sticking to itself. You may end up with playback problems. If it's really, really bad, there can be other problems involved as well. The next thing you want to look at is rippling. The pack should be fairly smooth like this, even though it should not have spoking. Rippling is a wavy pattern on the tape as it goes around. And this is caused by exposure to extreme environmental variations, usually having something to do with moisture. These tapes will almost always stick. You will always have problems playing these tapes back. They need to be treated before you do something. And you should not leave them just in storage this way. You should do something about these tapes. This is a close-up to show rippling. Here's a tape that was actually exposed to flood conditions, where the rippling is so bad that it's caused the whole pack on the outside to fall apart. The next thing you want to look for is popped strands. Now, the tape is supposed to be nice and flat. Anytime you see these lines going like this, what it is it's pieces of tape that are sticking up out of the flat plane of the pack of the tape. Now, this is an indication of potential future damage. I know of absolutely no instance whatsoever where you had playback problems with popped strands in a videotape. It's potential that you could have problems with playback in an audio tape if the recording is close enough to the edge of the tape, because it's linear instead of, in any case. But what this is it's a warning. These tapes need to be handled gently. Because the wraps are sticking up out of the pack, they're not protected. So if you handle them roughly in shipping, things like that, you can cause damage. So this is a warning sign. The next one is called a stepped pack or a slip pack. This is where an entire section is at a different height. And what's occurred is the tape is wrapped around the reel this way. The tape pack has become loose, and this entire section has moved the other direction and has fallen out of the pack. That means the interface between these two sections, there's something wrong. The tape is very possibly creased. It may well be folded over on itself. Shipping a tape under these circumstances is very likely to cause additional damage. When you play back a tape, you may lose tension at this point. It may pop. It may break. The next one is flange pack. The flange pack is where the tape has, and this is something because there is misalignment on a machine that was done. It's where the tape's all on one side. It's all up against one flange of the reel. And what happens is when that occurs, the pressure pushes the tape up and causes rippling all along the edge. And this will cause signal problems on a lot of tapes. It's possible to repack these tapes to some degree, but it is a severe problem. And that there are treatments for it to make it less so that you can get the tape to play back with a reasonable fidelity. Now, this is one of the problems that you had initially with the popped strands. If you ship the stuff with popped strands, you may end up with edge damage. When you're shining the light on the tape, one thing you see is popped strands. If you actually see a reflection, that means the edge is damaged. This edge is curled over, or it may be torn. And that can cause both severe playback problems, and when you get to these sections in the tape might tear. With a close-up, here's one where you see this divot here. Part of the tape is ripped off. And that tear goes farther down into the tape. If you just put it up for playback and haven't done something about it, that tape's going to tear in half. The next thing you're looking for in the pack is called gaps. And these are basic holes. For some reason, it's come loose. There may be some debris in there. The tape may be folded over on itself. You really need to wind the tape very slowly and often by hand down to these points and find out what's wrong. It's usually a handling problem that has occurred or exposure to environmental extremes. But if you simply play a tape back like this once again, you are likely to have problems. This is an indication that there are other problems with the tape. Sometimes when you have these gaps, you have things called cinching or an accordion pleat, if you see here. This is a close-up of the accordion pleat. Some of this looks fairly even, but if you look down here, there's a very sharp bend there. The tape is actually folded back over on itself. Once again, when you get to this point, you're going to lose tension on your machine. And then once the fold comes out, the tension's going to snap back in place. You're going to damage the tape. And one of the things that can happen is where the tape is folded back on itself, this is a circuit, the entire oxide, the entire recording layer may just fall off. That's what's happened in this circumstance. The final step that you're going to do, and this is in the standard, it only deals with reel-to-reel tapes. But you take the reel-to-reel tape and you let a small amount of the tape fall off the reel. You hold the reel by the inside, by the hub. Don't press the flanges together. And slowly turn the reel this way. If the tape falls straight off, that's a very good sign. If it has a tendency to want to ride back up and stay in the pack, that is an indication the tape's sticking to itself. It's probably got binder hydrolysis. If you run this tape, you are very likely to have problems with the recording surface getting damaged. As long as you've got a strand of tape hanging down there, you might as well take a look at it. And the number of things you're going to look at is you're going to look to see if there is any deformation. The tape should be nice and flat and straight. And you're also going to look for signs of binder base adhesion failure. Now, these are things where the tape is a different color. Now, the two different types of tapes that you will run into, one is a back-coated tape and one is not back-coated. In these situations, the recording surface has fallen off. But this, since it has no back coat, this is the recording surface, and this is just the base layer. On this one, what you're doing is you're seeing that clear base layer, but on the back of the tape, there's an extra coating. But it's a different color because of the fact that the recording surface has come off the tape. Now, here you just have a little tiny white dot. Once you start seeing that the recording surface is coming off, even in small amounts, that's when you should do something about it. You don't want to get to the point where you're losing large amounts of the recording surface. The next thing you're going to look at when you have the tape exposed is the albedo. And as I mentioned before, on cassettes, the recording surface is on the outside. Reel to reel, the recording surface is on the inside. A good tape should be nice and smooth and clear and shiny. If the tape is dull, that's an indication that it could possibly be binder hydrolysis, or it could have a lot of wear and tear on it. The tape may well play back, but you should be careful. Now, the standard only deals with this final step, step seven, with reel-to-reel, but you're probably going to want to do it with cassettes as well. The difficulty is, as the tape comes off the reel and onto the other reel, it's protected by a door. In order to examine the outer wrap of a cassette, you've got to open that door. There will be a little release close to the edge here that you need to press down. That door is on a hinge. If the tape is not tight between the two reels and you let go of that door, you're going to cause damage. So you have to be very careful when you do this. You have to hold that very securely and make sure that the tape is tight between, that you don't have any loops. The things you're going to look for are exactly the same things you were looking for before. You're going to look for deformation on the tape. The other thing that you can find in cassettes is this crunch tape where it loaded improperly and now it's all mangled as it enters the cassette. Once again, if you try and load this, if it does load, you probably have more problems than if it doesn't load, because it may continue damaging the cassette as it runs. Also, as I had mentioned, the tape sticking to the door. As you try and open the door, if the tape's sticking, you don't necessarily want to continue opening that door because you may rip the oxide off it. Here's the sort of damage that can occur when the tape is stuck. This is on a beta tape. You're also going to look for any sort of deformation, abrasion. this line here indicates that the tape has started stripping off inside the cassette. The mottled appearance here is a definite sign of binder hydrolysis, where the tape has started breaking down, and if you play this tape back, it's going to jam. So the final steps are make sure all the inspection failures are addressed before you use the tape. Make sure the tapes are wound securely. Once you've addressed the inspection failures, because you don't necessarily want to wind a tape that has problems, make sure all the tapes are wound securely onto one reel. If the tape pack was loosened while you're doing an inspection, retighten it very gently. Make sure all the erase lockouts are activated. Make sure all open reel tapes are secured with hold-down tape. You don't want the loose end of tape flapping around inside the box. Make sure you've isolated all the tapes with fungus, and then return the tapes that you've dealt with to storage in their proper upright orientation. Now, I've tried to leave some time for questions. You have the on the handouts, you have the written part of this that you can go over. Now you've seen what you're actually looking for. I hope I didn't scare anybody. It's really actually a very easy thing to do, and it takes, once you get used to it, you can do it in a minute or two. You're basically picking a tape up and going like this. So it's a very important examination for you to do. It can save, it can be instrumental in saving precious recordings. If you did not get a handout, I'll be around the conference. If anybody has any questions for me, I'll answer any questions you might have. Also on the handout is my contact information, or if you did not get a handout, my contact information is here, or you can come up and talk to me. Are there any questions at this point? Okay. That's a different standard, but I worked on that one as well. This is specifically for tape. And my recommendation is somewhat different. In the international standards, it gives you a range. And it says you can exchange temperature for humidity. But one of the things that is not clear in the international standard is what does damage to the tape is humidity. It is not the temperature. So you are better off lowering the humidity than you are lowering the temperature. Another problem that you'll run into is if you lower the temperature too much, you can't go below a certain level. You should never go below 55 degrees because you can start damaging certain additive chemicals in the tape. Never freeze a tape. But also, when you take a tape out of very cold storage, you then have to acclimatize it so you don't get condensation on the tape. So my preference would be to keep it warmer and drier. I prefer about 30% relative humidity and about 65 degrees. That way you can take it out and handle it without going through the whole steps of acclimatizing, but because of the very low humidity, the tape will last forever. Quite honestly, if you could store magnetic tape in an environment of zero humidity, as long as it's not acetate, but any polyester tape, theoretically, it should last forever. It should never break down. Any other questions? It depends how you're dealing with the tape. It is better to have a tape wound at a slow speed all the way to one end. With the thing about leaving it at the end is really specific to analog audio tape, because analog audio tape has something called print through, where the signal from one part of the tape will bleed into the next wrap of the tape. Therefore, if you leave it at the end of the tape, what happens is you get a post-echo as opposed to a pre-echo. The pre-echo is very, very disturbing. You actually do get print through on videotape, but the print through is below the level of production on of reproduction on the machine, so it never shows up. It's not a factor. So with videotape, it really doesn't make that much difference. Certainly, if you've been stopping and starting the tape, you're better off rewinding it so that you have a single full play through the entire tape. Well, a lot of it does depend on how many. Oh, how do you resolve the fungus, or how do you isolate it? Okay, I got to see how much time I've got. The first thing you must do with fungus, it's a multi-step process. The first thing you have to do with fungus is you have to get it down to a very low humidity. You cannot remove active fungus. As long as the fungus is at a high, at the tape is at a high humidity, the fungus will be active, will continue growing, and will continue eating your tape. If you try and clean the fungus off the tape, it'll just smear. So the first thing you do is for, say, 7 to 10 days, you have to put it in an environment of around 30% RH. Lower if you can. It depends what kind of, I mean, we have special environmental chambers that we use. Most people don't have that. I'm not entirely sure. One thing you can do is you get plastic bags, if you have a small amount, and put desiccants, chemical desiccants, silica gel. Seal it up in there. That'll take the humidity in the microenvironment in the bag down. Once you've dried it, then you have to remove the fungus. You can remove the fungus when it's dry. It becomes dry and brittle. You're not going to kill the fungus, so you don't want to expose that tape to high humidity conditions again, but you can take the fungus off the surface of the tape, all the flowering heads, to the point where you can play the tape back and you can get a copy. We are capable of killing the fungus, but that is a very complex and very expensive proposition that uses restricted chemicals. Most people can't get a hold of. We have them because we're a specialty laboratory, but how you would clean it, the only way I can think of someone cleaning it at home is running it on a machine and using some sort of tissue wipe. I mean, we have special machines that do cleaning. They're designed to clean tape. But does that answer your question?
I'm just wondering about your last point there where you say the proper orientation for storage.
Yes.
I had no idea. I mean, we usually store all our tapes flat. Is that right, or am I
no.
wrong? What should we do?
Tapes should be stored on edge. The only tapes to be stored, 99.9% tapes should be stored on edge. The only place where you have a problem with that is with some reel-to-reel audio. Sometimes you have very, very large reels of reel-to-reel audio, and if you store it on edge, the weight of the tape could deform the tape. But any videotape should be stored on edge. And any cassette tape should be stored on edge. It's people argue back and forth whether the large reel-to-reel audio tapes, quarter-inch audio tapes, if it's a 2-inch audio tape or a 1-inch digital audio tape, it should be still stored on edge. But with the very large quarter-inch reels, personally, I'd store them on their side.
What about film?
What about film? I'm sorry?
How do you store it, on its edge? Or
I don't store film. I refer you over to a film lab. I mean, a lot of film, I mean, well, I really shouldn't be talking about how film is stored, frankly. Sorry. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Yes.
Does it matter which edge you stand it on? Upright or horizontally or vertically?
Doesn't really make a difference. There's one or two cassettes, I mean, that make them. One of the things that does make a difference is for disaster. Normally, cassette boxes are made to look like books, and so everybody stores them that way. However, in a disaster scenario, if the water is coming from the surface, from above, it'll catch on the top of the cassette case and will feed it down, the water down into the cassette. Whereas if you store it on edge with the spine up, the water will run off the sides. Nobody stores it that way, but hopefully they don't have any water dripping off their ceiling. Yes?
Is there a way to recommend to deal with pack problems in-house?
Yeah, pack problems, what you need to do is you need to spool it down very... First of all, you need to get a machine that is properly aligned. So you need to do it on a good machine. You never use a rewind machine. You don't use a cheap machine. You use a good machine that your technicians have aligned properly. And you spool it. Basically, what you're doing is you're just spooling it very, very slowly for the pack problems to... if you have a hydrolysis issue, no. You can't do that because if you spool it, you may rip the tape apart. But if it's just a pack problem itself, and sometimes to check if it's hydrolysis, you spool it very, very slowly. Sometimes you actually have to spool it by hand on some of the really bad parts. Or you can go out and you can build a machine to do it. But you can do it on a good playback deck at a slow speed. The slower the speed, the better.
On your point here about make sure all open reel tapes are secured with hold down tape, what is a hold down tape?
Okay. Unfortunately, too often people stick the scotch tape or masking tape or all sorts of strange tapes onto the end. Those things will damage the tape, and they can start to powder and contaminate the tape. Hold down tape is a specially designed tape. You can get it from audio labs. I believe Ampex is still making a hold down tape. It is a tape specifically designed so that it can be removed, so that the glue doesn't go bad and it can be removed without tearing the tape apart. Ampex, which is now called Quantigy, makes it. There are a number of, if you look online with people who sell professional audio supplies, you can often find it. I know there's a place in California out now that's selling it. I don't remember their name at the moment. The other thing you can try doing is removable artist tape. The removable artist tape is a little stiffer. You have some problems. You may have to use a larger piece because it doesn't stick quite as well. But that's another option if you can't find the tape that's specifically made for holding down audio tape.
I think we're getting it from U.S. Recording. You check, they're on the web. I think usrecording.com, I think, is all it is.
We're sort of running over time, but if anybody has any other questions, I'm perfectly willing to. Or you can come up and ask them individually. I'll be around.